happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. So let's sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together.
The ultimate mother-daughter act. Debbie Reynolds became famous at age 19 for her role in the 1952 movie Singin' in the Rain, and for decades she was the star of films, Broadway shows, and cabaret acts. Her daughter, Carrie Fisher, also became famous at age 19 in the 1977 original Star Wars, and she had great success as an actress and as the writer of books, including Postcards from the Edge and Wishful Drinking. In December 2016, they shockingly died within 24 hours of each other. Todd Fisher is a director, cinematographer, producer, Debbie's son, and Carrie's brother. He's written a memoir called My Girls, A Lifetime with Carrie and Debbie. It's published by HarperCollins, and he's right here with me now. Todd Fisher, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So when... Did you start writing this memoir when your mother and sister were still alive?
Well, Carrie and I had written a screenplay together called 813 Greenway Drive, which was where Carrie and I grew up, and it was a coming-of-age story, more raucous, what it was, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Hollywood style. And we had finished that screenplay, and we were kind of going to turn it into a series. And then this horrible tragedy occurred where the two of them left the earth. And so I parked that, and I realized that I had to tell the stories that weren't told because, you know, Carrie, as you just kind of reiterated there, she told many stories, but they were snapshots. Postcards is a snapshot of a small period of time. And the 813 Greenway story was a prequel to Postcards. And so, you know, there were a lot of tales that Carrie was telling, but always in small pieces. She never got to tell her all of her stories, nor can I tell them all, but I've told all the ones in the journey together. And, you know, we had a great journey together. My family, we were all pretty tight.
I was going to say, they both wrote their own memoirs. Were there aspects of your lives that they left out or that you would have expressed differently?
Well, my mother wrote a memoir. Carrie really didn't ever write a complete memoir. She, as I say, she did sort of snippets. And, you know, she was the great master storyteller, you know, so unique and so amazing at articulating things. My mother told a more wider tale. She wrote two memoirs, actually, and they're both very good. They're more linear in that respect. But, you know, she's telling it from a mother's perspective. She didn't know kind of how Carrie and I felt, what it was like to grow up in under this microscope and to grow up in a world, as Carrie used to say, where your underwear is on the outside of your clothes. And, you know, we really had to live that way. And there's a unique side that only the children of such a person could, you know, could tell you.
Well, the children of such a person, but you were the children of such people.
Yes.
I mean, Eddie Fisher was your...
No small change.
Yeah, it was your dad. Debbie Reynolds is your mom. What was it like for you to be the child of really Hollywood royalty?
Well, you know, it is my only frame of reference. Other than I would watch TV and I'd see shows like Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best, and you'd think, wow, my life doesn't look anything like that. And you know, that was funny and interesting. But, you know, it is, Carrie and I used to say we had our own sort of shared sense of weirdness. She used to say that. Now, I didn't really think there was anything that weird about it because it seemed pretty normal to me.
Yeah, that was your life.
Yeah, and it's privileged, and there were a lot of great things about it. There were also some negative. You have to share your mother with all of her fans. And my mother was very good about that and made it very clear to Carrie and I that you know, she was also part of their lives as much as she was ours. And it was drilled into us. And later, Carrie embraced that herself.
Well, at the time growing up as a kid, how did that feel to have to share, not only share your mother, but have her say to you, they are as much a priority as you are.
Well, here's the story. I'm walking down the street in Beverly Hills to go into a toy store. I'm maybe 6-7 years old. My mom one side, Carrie's on the other. We're trying to pull our mother into this toy store because we have an agenda. You know, my mother stops us because a fan walks up and wants to talk. And, you know, we're pulling, you know, kids, right? And my mother comes down to our level, brings us in, and she says, these people are just as important at this moment. And this is why I am who I am. Without these people, we would not have what we have. They are part of us. You need to accept that. And that was drilled into our consciousness. And Carrie didn't like it, nor did I particularly. We did, of course, get to go into the toy store, so everything worked out happily ever after. But the reality is that many years, it took Carrie many years to be able to even adopt that when she became a star, because she didn't like it. But then she realized that she was owned by these Star Wars fans at a certain point, and just, it was like, okay, I'm Princess Leia. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I like the word that you used for her, that she realized that she was owned by these fans. And Star Wars fans, they're no joke.
That's right.
They take those movies and the series and the characters and the actors who play them very, very seriously.
It's real. It's very real.
You said a moment ago that your sister Carrie Fisher once said that, you know, we, being in this family, we wear our underwear on the outside.
Yep.
And one of the things that you had to deal with, I guess at an early age, was the what was called the scandal of the century, when your father left your mother for Elizabeth Taylor, and this played out in public. What was that like for you?
Well, I was extremely young, but you know, that saga didn't end overnight. You know,
right.
That was an endless saga. In fact, it went on forever. You know, even in my 30s, people would walk up to me, men in particular from the Korean War. They would come up and they'd say, you know, we loved your mother. She entertained us in Korea. You know, if you ever want us to like kick your dad's ass, just let us know. You know, and we're like, I was like, hey man, I'm over it. You know, it's like 30 years ago. I don't know. But there was a seriousness to the fans. Once again, those fans were very loyal to Debbie. But the trauma to the public was actually greater than I think to Carrie and I in many ways. Now, Carrie was affected more deeply than I was. I was a few months old when he left.
I was about to ask, how old were you?
I was only 6 months old, and then I was like three, you know, when everything was over. But, you know, the reality is that what hurt me more than the direct impact of that was watching my sister be hurt by him. Watching her wait for him to come pick us up and him never show. That, as a brother, was hurtful. And so the devastation that she felt really had to do more with the abandonment of the daughter and the father relationship, which can be deadly. You know, if you watch the film Bright Lights, I produced a film with Fisher Stevens many years later, and Carrie was in it and Debbie was in it. There's a scene with Eddie and Carrie where he's in just a few months from leaving the earth, and she is literally begging him, do you love me? And it's a very pointed moment, and it was hard for me to watch. It was really hard for her to watch. In fact, when we ran Bright Lights at the Lincoln Center, it was the first time Carrie had ever seen that scene, and she had to walk out. She just lost it because it was a lifelong trauma, being abandoned by your father. The public, you know, I think was more angry than any of us in the long run. They right. held on to it. But the truth is, it was a huge scandal. By today's standards, it would be the Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt breakup kind of thing, you know, maybe even bigger. I don't know. Because the morality of those days was much more serious.
You're right.
Much more serious. But Liz Taylor also was like, wow, you know. You know? Like, years later, I looked at that. I said, okay, I get it. You know, I mean, you know, he was mesmerized by her,
as was the world, as was the nation. How did your mother and Elizabeth Taylor later, how did they come to renew their friendship?
Well, you know, they my mother really never blamed her per se, but years later Carrie wrote a little movie called These Old Broads, and it starred Liz and Joan Collins and Shirley MacLaine and my mom, and it's a great piece.
That's a good...
And in there, Carrie wrote it, and she writes this scene where my mother and Liz have a makeup scene from Freddie. Now the ex Freddie is Eddie, of course. No veiled thing there. It's an amazing scene. But during those days, we all became very close again, and Carrie was the one who essentially wrote the history. Rewrote the history.
You said you all became close again, meaning
Liz.
Liz
came into the circle. She and Carrie became close, and I became close with her. I was named after Mike Todd. Mike Todd was her husband, in fact, the love of her life. and he was died in a plane crash on his way to see me. Just a few months after I was born, or actually a month after I was born.
Okay, I was going to ask you, so then you had no relationship with Eddie Fisher.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, he would come around occasionally, we'd hang out. He was a heck of a lot of fun. I mean, the guy would, you know, we'd go out and buy like 40 G.I. Joes, you know, and he would take, he was an irresponsible guy, which was fine, you know.
When you, when you're a kid, yeah.
Yeah, because he's a playmate. So when you were with Eddie, he was magnetic. He was like a blast. And at that moment when you were with him, you felt like you were his best friend. And then 2 seconds later, that's the end. And you wouldn't hear from him for months and months and months. Keep in mind, Eddie was bipolar. Something that affected later Carrie. Yeah. So, but no one knew what it was back then. Back then, it was just crazy behavior, or you don't care.
Let's run through Let's talk about your two stepfathers first. Harry Carl.
Right. So Harry Carl was the epitome of American aristocracy. I mean, this guy was he was the shoe magnate. He owned the largest shoe chain in the United States. It had been given to him by his father, so he was fabulously wealthy. And Debbie married him because, wow, you know, I just got dumped by a guy kind of my age, and it was young infatuation, and I need to do something really stable for the kids here. You know, I need to provide a very stable home, and I'll marry this rich guy, and we'll have a big house, and life will be beautiful.
And then?
And then the shoe dropped, no pun intended.
Literally.
And, you know, he was, no one knew it, but he was a gambler, and literally had gambled away her money, his money, everybody's money. And he was also, you know, an alcoholic. Although he handled himself like a Dean Martin style, it was classy, kind of, I'm a drunk. But the reality was, nonetheless, his judgment was in the John, you know. So he destroyed us. And my mother, Carrie, really never forgave him. My mother, you know, sort of just moved on. And, you know, she paid all of his debts off, did not file bankruptcy, refused to, said, hey, I made the bad choice, not the rest of you. I'm going to pay off all this. It was a remarkable thing to do. It was foolish, but it was remarkable. And by the way, the way she bailed herself out of that was by doing the play Irene here in New York. It became one of the highest grossing plays in New York history.
And then stepfather number three, Richard Hamlet.
Yeah. Now, Richard's the scoundrel of the group. You know, as it turns out, Eddie is the best of all. So the bar is obviously very low. But needless to say, he was a way better guy. He never did anything maliciously. He didn't ruin us in that respect. Richard Hamlet, you know, was a con man and essentially was in it for the money and really took advantage of Debbie and broke her heart. And as a son, that pisses you off, you know, to see somebody hurt your mother. You know, it was really hard for me not to, as that Korean War vet wanted to do, kick his ass or something more elaborate. But at any rate, you know, he was a nightmare. You know, he took her for millions.
Your mother, she was an avid collector of film memorabilia.
Yes.
All manner of film memorabilia, costumes as well?
Well, that was the main thing, actually. In Debbie's mind, the most relevant piece would be the thing that was actually on the person. So when Vivian Leigh is on that hill during Gone with the Wind, and she says, by God, I will never go hungry again, and we go to the intermission, I mean, it's like a pointed moment. She thought, okay, that costume, that film clip is what we need to be looking at. So she collected the greatest moments in film history, not necessarily something that won an Academy Award or was nominated, even beyond that. She would just go for her gut as a fan. Don't forget, Debbie was a fan. Not, you know, you don't just get to be a movie star. Carrie was born, you know, into Hollywood royalty. My mother comes from dirt farmer, railroad people from Texas. I mean, we were poorer than dirt. And so, you know, she was mesmerized by Hollywood. And so she felt this urgency to preserve it. The costumes were her priority. She did have tons of props and other things. We collected the cameras, the props, the lights, you name it.
Yeah, there wasn't this. Wait, How the West Was Won, was that set reconstructed in your backyard? Was it that set from that movie?
It was a lot of Westerns. They didn't shoot How the West Was Won on that back lot. But many films were shot. I did have the camera from that movie, but I have to say I salvaged a lot of the set off the back lot of MGM. My mother let me, of course, and we put it in Beverly Hills in the backyard, so my friends and I could fantasize and do the remake of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Your mother Debbie Reynolds. She was working up until the time she died. Yes. Will and Grace, Behind the Candelabra. She loved acting.
Well, not just acting. Okay, so she liked acting. The Behind the Candelabra was kind of the last big thing she did. But what she liked more than anything was being with her public, with her people. Those were her people. When she was with her audience, she was fulfilled. Without it, she didn't feel fulfilled. She retired four or five times that I observed, and it lasted a month, two, 3 months, whatever. And, you know, she couldn't do it because she was so connected to those that she loved live performing more than she did movies. She liked doing movies. It was fun. You know, when she got to plant in Halloween Town, you know, that was like another rebirth. That certainly Will and Grace was cool.
You know, I'm glad you brought up live performing because it reminds me there's this great picture in the book of your mother, your sister, and you, the children were a part of your mother's act when you were, when you were children.
Yes.
I know your sister, Carrie Fisher, suffered from stage fright.
Yeah. Well, when we were about 11 and 12 years old, my mother said, it's time for you guys to go to work and step into the family business. Now, a lot of people, you know, you own a restaurant or a garage or some family business and you teach kids to be accountants or whatever. You know, in our case, you were going to teach us the business. By the way, she wouldn't have jammed it down our throat and did not jam it down our throat. But Carrie gravitated even more to it than I did, and from she liked performing. Mm-hmm. But it's ironic, as you say, we were standing there on our first time ever at the Desert Inn Hotel, getting ready to walk on stage. We're in the wings by the fire curtain, and she's freaking out. And I mean, like I'm looking at someone who is literally about to come ungraveled, you know. And I kind of had to take her by the hand and bring her out. Now, the interesting thing about that is that panic was palatable. But when she got on the stage, it was like, happy days are here again. She's off. And like all of a sudden the spotlight hits her and it evaporated, you know, but her whole life she suffered from that, except for the very end. And part of this had to do with her insecurity, you know, as a performer. She later found herself as a writer. She was superior to anybody I know. And there was a competition. I mean, a lot of questions are asked about what's it like being in the shadow of a Debbie Reynolds your whole life. And so you could take that one of two ways. Carrie took it as a competition. Oh, how am I ever going to be competing with that? How could I ever be as good as? How could I ever sing as good or act as good? And the truth is, you probably couldn't. But she could write better than my mother by a long shot. And, you know, when that sunk in, she became pretty secure in who she was.
Now, what about you? You're a little kid being pushed out there literally on the public stage.
My problem had nothing to do with the stage. I was cool being out there with them. I played a little guitar, sang with them. My problem was I was 11 and you had to take a shower every day and put on makeup every day. Now, asking an 11-year-old to give up his summer and bathe every day and all this is like a nightmare. You know, I had things to do. I had army men and you know, wars to win and whatever.
All those G.I. Joes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had an agenda. I was, you know, I just wasn't into it. I never was.
Mm-hmm. You know, before we started this interview, during during the commercial break, you and I were talking about podcast interview I did for the Washington Post with Mark Hamill.
Yes.
And he talked a lot about your sister and about Star Wars and how he had issues with being Luke Skywalker and being typecast, and how she once said to him, I'm Princess Leia, you're Luke Skywalker, get over yourself, embrace it.
Yes.
Your sister had no problem being Princess Leia.
Well, you know, this part of all of that came from my mother, if you think about it. I mean, you know, her upbringing was leading up to all of these things. But Carrie was raised as a princess in our house. She was a little Beverly Hills princess. When George Lucas saw Carrie come into that audition room, ha! It's typecasting. She is the princess. There's no denying it. I mean, it's genius that he grabbed it, of course, and now she is our princess. And initially, though, Carrie, like Mark, was thinking, well, I don't know about this princess thing. But one day, in the middle of all of that, you know, journey, she flashed. And those words that my mother had spoken to us in front of the toy store and things like that, she knew that she and Princess Leia were one. And she embodied the spirit of Princess Leia. And when people saw her, she was the princess. Mm-hmm. Little children didn't know how to separate the two. That's the purest example of all. I mean, she is. And Carrie finally went, that's us. So somebody like Mark was, you know, literally going, hey, I'm kind of tired of this. People are calling me Luke Skywalker. Yeah. You know, she's like, get over it, man. It's the greatest blessing on earth.
Your book is entitled My Girls. It's about your mother, Debbie Reynolds, your sister, Carrie Fisher. We learn a few things more about them that we didn't already know. What do you hope people will learn about you as a result of this book?
You know, I don't think people fully understood kind of where I was in all of this and how complicated this journey is. Everybody has a complicated life. Ours just happened to be in public, you know, but it was highly complex. And, you know, Carrie was bipolar. You know, my mother had a lot of complicated personal issues with husbands and things. The journey, although it was magical and beautiful, was also highly complicated and highly charged. And at 15, I became sort of the caretaker of the girls. That's the title, My Girls. And I rode the background there and ran interference and fixed things. I was the fixer, you know, for both of them. And at different times, more so than others. And, you know, there were times where we weren't with each other every moment of every day, of course. But the journey in general is outlined in this book. And I try to tell a magical story. It was a magical story. And that is why the urgency of writing the book. Because without Carrie, who's going to tell about this magical place, this magical journey, this place where we grew up, the place where Princess Leia was born, so to speak, the journey that created Princess Leia, why Princess Leia was Princess Leia? How did that happen? Look to my mother.
And look to your book, My Girls, A Lifetime with Carrie and Debbie. Todd Fisher, thank you very much for
being
here.
Thank you.